Live from Seattle, Washington, it's the Chris Perillo Show. Each week, Chris breaks down the latest technology trends, providing answers to your questions, conversations with tech luminaries, and the latest buzz from across the web. Now, here's Chris.
We've got this. We'll start off with Dan the Automator with Relaxation Spa Treatment.
gotta love her, folks. You just gotta love her. And I'm not talking about the whole music thing.
So you weren't talking about the Thievery Corporation?
No. I'm talking about my fiance. We're taking this break. And you know what she did last week? She made popcorn and not thinking that we couldn't eat it, of course, on the air. But she did it again. She made popcorn. But this time she was doing it with, you know, good intentions that she was making it so that we could eat it in our break. And she tried to make it quickly, but too quickly. So now it's not just the smell of popcorn. She cooked it too fast, so it's burnt popcorn. So unfortunately, she will not be able to enjoy
it. And, you know, that's one of the most evil smells in the whole world.
It's not too bad. I don't mind burnt
popcorn. Actually, this smells more like braised popcorn than
braised
burnt popcorn.
Well, luckily, it was only braised.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I think popcorn, like it or not, is becoming the official snack food of this particular show, which is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. This is the third hour of the Chris Perillo Show, and at least for this particular sitting on January 27th, 2005. If you're listening live, we're going to be doing a geek dinner down the street in Leschi Beach at Blue Water. And I would call ahead to make reservations so that you don't overwhelm them if a whole bunch of geeks flood the place. They're open until 1 in the morning, though. Great. No Wi-Fi, but perfect place for conversation, in my opinion. Fantastic food.
Of course, if you're going to be there like at 10:30 in the evening coming to chat with us, probably Wi-Fi might not be the number one requirement.
No.
Now, is this the Blue Water Taco Grill? Or
no. I linked to it on... If you go to the Chris Perillo Show site or my blog, I link to it in a specific post. So the link is there, so there's no confusing addresses. And, this is if the geek dinner works, doesn't work, we're going to do it again, folks. I love Seattle. I love meeting people here. The only one blog meetup I've been to, it was great. Doing the blog business summit was fantastic, not just for the people who are here. Who were at the event, but the people who are here in Seattle, they stopped by after the fact to the reception. They kind of came in, and it was great. In fact, you were one of them, Matt.
Yep.
And you were there with, I think, did you actually come with Jeannie?
Yes, I did bring Jeannie.
You must know each other in some kind of capacity.
Yeah. And that's Jeannie of Jeannie.com.
Or Jeannie Cool.
Jeannie Cool.
I don't know.
Confused with Molly of Molly.com, yes. Who was also in attendance.
Yeah. Everybody's got a .com. It's kind of hard to keep them straight. But Jeannie is, I was on her bad list up until recently because I used to go into the Joy Ito chat room. I'd log into the server with Trillian and then forget it's in the background. Well, with the Locker Gnome chat, folks, they understand that if I pop online, I will be there and I will watch the conversation, but I never say anything.
Yeah.
I just watch it. And so they joke when I say something. But for a long time, Jeannie, the bot in the Joy Ito chat room said that I was on her bad list. And she finally took that off.
The unfavored list? Or something like that.
So I'm now Jeannie likes me again. And it was wonderful to meet her. And there was no weirdness. I just said, I apologize for logging in and never saying anything.
Yeah. Well, I started going on to Joey Ito after South by Southwest because he was doing he was on a panel on emerging democracy, and there was the back channel was the Joey Ito channel, so it's sitting on the 12-foot projector, and so I jumped in there and then just sort of ended up staying, and I discovered, a bunch of people that were in the Seattle area that are on the channel, and finally we triangulate down to the fact that I'm about 15 blocks south of Jeannie. You know, we're that close, really, in the grand scheme of things.
Is that crazy? So. Well, it's amazing, on the internet, you automatically assume they're just light years away, but then sometimes they're literally in your backyard.
Oh, and then there's the temporal thing, like somebody that you knew from 12 years ago that sort of
I was from Iska?
Yeah, well, no. I did get her on Iska. Different person now.
Okay.
I got this email yesterday. So I said my week was weird. So this is how weird it was. I got this email in my inbox it says, did I know you from Flagstaff? And of course, I graduated high school in Flagstaff. I dropped out of college in Flagstaff and then started, started working. And I worked with a guy named Eric, and then his then girlfriend, now wife, Kimberly. Like the three of us and a couple other people would hang out and that kind of thing. And then sort of we went our separate ways and, never to be heard from again, we would suppose. And then I get this email and I'm like, yes, of course that's me. And she's like, well, I figured you'd be a geek. And I'm like, okay, great. We were working at Radio Shack, so you figured something was up.
Right? Sure.
So
it's genetic.
Yeah. So I'm freaking out. She lives in the Seattle area. She lives in Carnation.
Oh, wow.
And both of them work at Microsoft.
No.
So not only that, it gets better. Eric and I were working, on the Microsoft campus at the same time. But he has a name that's common enough that the distribution list at Microsoft, the address book is 30,000 to 50,000 people.
Yeah.
It's enormous, and so you'd see names that you'd kind of recognize or things like that. I also found out that my class valedictorian in Flagstaff works at Microsoft. It's just I had friends that moved here they either came here or went to San Diego.
Yeah,
that's that.
Well, and I've been in both places, and I can tell you, far and away, cost of living, just people, just the feel of Seattle is such, for me, just a natural fit. I mean, I cannot tell you, it's like flannel. I mean, it's comfortable, I apologize, by the way, those squeaks and pops are not the audio stream if you're catching this, Jake. These would be my dogs in the background, which Ponzi, I guess, is taking care of. Thanks, babe.
I don't think we can hear him on the
air. Okay, good. These microphones must be really good then, because I'm getting flooded with chirps and beeps.
I get to keep this one, right? This is my
microphone?
Honorarium?
No. you actually understand that word. I had to use that word the other day, and no one knew what it meant.
Really?
The honorarium. Which, according to, and I don't know if you caught this either. That was
now like, we may be able to hear dogs.
Yeah, dogs.
the clicky babies there.
Experimental noise on the Chris Perillo show.
Well, I knew you didn't like it, so figured I'd put you on the spot. The now I've lost my train of thought. Can you rewind that?
Honorarium.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Honorarium. I was at Google. And they have that definition feature where you search for a word and then you can click definition next to it and it pulls up the definition for that word. And now they're using answers.com. They were using dictionary, and I can say thank you to Google because dictionary serves pop-ups and it's just annoying. And even with a pop-up blocker, some of them slip through. And so now they're using answers.com, which I believe is a lot more intuitive, a lot less in your face. And an honorarium is something that's not necessarily required, but it's kind of like it could be considered a stipend or a gift or something in exchange for goods or services.
Which is customary.
Customary for like a speaker. Unfortunately, all we have to offer you is more listeners at this point.
I'm all about that. I did, I don't even need T-shirts because.
To hand out, you mean?
I mean, if you hear like what radio DJs and the traffic people get from
Listened to radio in about 5 years.
Yeah, but the stuff that the labels send them as promotional material for things, it's outrageous.
Well, hey, just we'll take swag.
Yeah, on the other hand, if you want to send me free stuff, by all means,
I got my address.
Yeah, I gotta say, I got over the whole swag thing like about 99, 2000. I went to this conference. I went to Palm Source, and I got 7 T-shirts or something like that, and then it just dried up in 2000, and I didn't really miss it. I get pens. I steal pens. I steal them like you would not believe.
Can you steal some of ours? Because I got Ponzi she hoards them like they're going out of style.
Yeah. I'll work on it. Just, turn your back in a room full of pens.
Speaking of swag, did you get one of my RSS buttons?
I did not get one of the RSS buttons.
You will get some. There's your honorarium. You get to You get to go home with RSS on your chest. Those, you know, I know I'm going to be printing those up till the end of time. I've got to find a cheaper supplier, though.
Are you bringing them to the Geek Dinner?
I probably should. Now that you bring it up, I probably should. That's how you can tell it's me. I'll be wearing the RSS button and a flower.
Of course, after you hand them out to people, then you won't be able to tell that it's you.
Well, let's hope no one else has them then. Then we can hand them out.
Oh, and of course, don't think of this necessarily as dinner, because you're certainly welcome to have drinks, dessert, coffee.
And understand, no one's paying for the dinner except for you.
Like, I am?
Not you, Jake.
Oh.
As in the royal you. We were using the we yes. earlier, it's the royal.
So it's a Dutch date of
yes,
sorts.
Of sorts. So, this is the third hour, and we're just getting back into it with Matt.
The music.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Of
course.
I missed a track.
No problem.
Last one that you heard was Thievery Corporation with DC 3000, and that is on the Wired CD, which is at creativecommons.org/wired.
That's easy. No, and we're about to roll into another song here in a couple minutes. But you know, part of what makes this show unique is that it does ebb and flow. There's time to explore and extend conversations instead of having to keep them at 5 minute sound bites and 15 minutes. We're now heading into the third hour, and I still do very much want to tackle the music formats and get your opinions on them, because there are so many out there, and I didn't even realize that FLAC was a format. I mean, I thought that was just something that ducks said on TV when they were trying to hawk insurance. And Shorten is another one, SHN, Shorten Files. And I don't know what formats of the music you brought. Are these MP3s?
These are all
MP3s,
yeah.
They're MP3s. All right, so what do we have here?
I think we are going to go with Feek is next. And this is an artist out of Montreal on Epsilon Lab Records. And this track is called Un Peu d'Espoir.
Flack, Og, Wooma, MP3. These are all audio formats that are on the web, and it's hard to keep track of which does what and which one's better than another. So all of these audio formats...
Don't forget ACK and RAM.
I forgot about those two.
And
RAW.
And
Shorten.
And AU.
Shn. It would have... Shn.
Yes.
AU.
AU. Which is actually my brother's last name.
Vox.
Well, that's a given.
You get old school with mod speaks.
Oh, yeah. 669s. And ITs. ITs. Oh, I'm sorry. That was way incredibly geeky. All these audio formats that are out there. You've provided these songs in MP3 format. Is this the format in which you find them on the web?
Yeah, I think there is one label that I know of that does them in OGG. That's the Kavi Collective. And on archive.org, they have some sort of downsampled MP3 versions as well. But every other label does it in at least MP3 and sometimes FLAC.
Now, why choose, say, FLAC over MP3?
Okay, I have a handful of people who are friends of mine and also audiophiles, which I define as people who listen to the equipment rather than the music. So Eve is going to hear this, and he's going to smack me.
And, but of course, anyway, when you say audiophiles, it's PH, not necessarily the actual audio files themselves.
Right, correct. So the audio lovers. But FLAC is essentially a lossless version of the music. So it's rendered. If you were to take these bits, reconstitute them with a few extra ones and zeros, you would have exactly Redbook audio, the stuff that came off the CD. So when you get into MP3, OGG, etc., you're creating loss, and you're going to hear it sooner or later. I think most people are still fine with 128K. Staccato goes down to 96K because it's a big enough show as it is. The download is about 50 meg for the it's a CD length show.
Well, and what you're really doing is kind of pointing people towards music, not necessarily. Right. Republishing.
Yeah. And I don't want to go down to 64 because that's when you really start to hear it in MP3. So I want to have a format that's good enough for this. And of course, all of the original tracks are available usually on archive.org as variable bit rate, 192K, 64K, and OGG. Sometimes FLAC, sometimes the original WAV file.
Now, how does Shorten play into this?
Shorten, as I understand it, is another lossless encoding scheme, or at least very close to lossless. So that's almost as much as I know about it. I know that most of the live music archive uses the Shorten format. So you can get the... There's a Winamp plugin for that, and then there's also a conversion that you can convert it to WAV, and then back to MP3 or something like that. And
Shorten could actually be lossless or lossy. It can go either or. I think it's typically used in the lossless format.
And when we're talking about lossy and lossless, we're talking about audio here. And when you compress it, it's not quite like a zip file where when you uncompress a file that's sitting in a zip file, it was the same as when you put it in. With audio, once you clip the music, it's impossible to get that data back. So whereas a 384 kilobit file sounds really, really good, if you play that against a 128 kilobit file, with a good song, you're probably going to hear the difference. It's going to do certain things with the highs and the lows. You're losing a bit of music. This is the reason why a lot of audio files still use vinyl, because you have a broader range. Putting the music on CD, actually, you lose some of those, some of the bits, if you will. I mean, especially translating to digital. But you lose the highs and the lows. And the normal ear wouldn't necessarily be able to pick it up. How did you define an audio file? As someone who studies the hardware?
Somebody who listens to the hardware. Yeah. I think it's very true. These are the people that say, have the, you know, 2 watts that are going through a vacuum tube and you know, and creating this earth shattering bass that you know, that of course rings true, right? It's the you know, people for whom a discussion of $20,000 digital to analog converters, which are little pieces that go into a grander system like a CD player, is something that they can be engaged in for hours at a time. So those people are going to at least want FLAC, you know, and they're probably going to want to have the DVD audio version of it ripped at full resolution or something like that. So, I mean, they're not MP3 listeners much at all, because it's like fingernails against a chalkboard, because the MP3 format is designed to first strip out all the stuff that you can't hear. So, you know, if the dynamic range of a track is what, 20 to 20,000 hertz. So you have this, you know, so, but you can't hear over a certain range at a given time. So it starts trimming out the stuff that it doesn't think it needs. So this is the same idea as compressing a JPEG or whatever. But the ultimate output of this depends on how much of it gets saved. So that's why when you hear the 20K records music, all you're hearing is this really narrow band of, you know, bass with a few little tinny highs and things like that, because it is so, you know, so deeply compressed that it's really just trying its best to capture anything that resembles the original.
And have you stumbled upon any lossless Windows Media Audio out there?
I have not yet, no.
The group Sugar Mags, which is one of the file sharing groups that they trade a lot of like old Grateful Dead audio and Fish audio and like a lot of the other jam band groups have started to use Windows Media lossless because partially through some hard lobbying from a friend of ours, Joel Schoenbrunn, who works for the University of UCLA. And he's sort of has lived in that world quite a bit and is a big fan of Windows Media and is very familiar with both the FLAC format and Windows Media Lossless, and has convinced a lot of the people that it is as good or better in terms of being able to play back the dynamic range.
That's something that it should be that people really wouldn't have to think about. I mean, it should be the audio would automatically play in their player. Well, with Windows Media, if they have the Windows Media player, it would. But something, as you said, you could get like a Winamp plugin for the shortened format or the FLAC format.
Well, the thing is, I don't know. I mean, for me, I don't want to have to track down something so that I can play a file. I want it to just play.
Right.
Well, and MP3, I think that's the argument.
MP3 is the lingua franca of music on the web. Every, you know, every device that you can think of plays it. There is no DRM attached to it. You know, you don't have. There's no question that if you have an MP3 out there, with very little exception, that's what's going to be heard. You know, so when you get out into OGG, you know, there are only a handful of players that play that. When you get into Windows Media, then you have issues with some of them don't work with DRM. You know, you have to look for the like Plays for Sure players and things like that. It's not going to work on the iPod.
Well, and although that's iPod, not entirely true, because most of the players support Windows Media DRM in terms of being able to play individual songs that you purchased for download. Where the Plays for Sure issue comes in is with the Janus DRM, which allows transportability of subscription songs, where you're right, basically paying for a monthly service fee.
Right.
And
so
then
like
you transfer the files over there. Yeah, a Rhapsody type subscription service. Napster has a subscription service. I think that MSN is maybe going to have a subscription service.
Now, Matt, let me ask you a question. Have you heard the MP3 5.1 yet?
I have not, but the thing is, I'm trying to cut down on the things that I'm a snob about.
Is coffee one of them?
I'm completely coffee caffeine free at least. So although I do get the Swiss water decaf rather than the like Folgers can thing. Anyway, given that I'm listening to, you know, 20 hours or more a week of variable bitrate or 192K MP3s, and my entire music collection ripped to date is at 128, I really don't want to know what I'm missing. You know, I have good headphones, and I can start to notice artifacts, but I really don't. It's a dangerous. There's dragons on that path. You know, I don't want to have to worry about, you know, should I, if I ever re-rip my collection, God forbid, is going to be to FLAC. I'm not going to mess with any of the, you know, with any of the intermediaries.
But isn't that creating such a tremendous file size?
Well, the FLAC files, in my experience, tend to be 300 something k kilobit. So. I'm only tripling my file size, but you know, I had my entire music collection in 40 something gig before, so I can buy a 250 gig hard drive for $150 now. So, and I can transform the stuff on the fly if I want to slam it onto an iPod or whatever.
Sure.
So that's not a big issue for me.
But you haven't seen my like wall of CDs. I have not even begun to dent transferring them to digital, just because of the time.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
Now you have a service
sense.
Where you can take them and put them in a box and ship them off and have them rip them for you.
See, my problem with a service like that is that, okay, what if somewhere in the process they just vanish? I have a lot of CDs. A lot of the CDs that I own are like stuff that I would never be able to find again.
Oh, I would leave that stuff at home. Like I have a few of those myself, and I would never trust anyone else with them. But if you have a collection of, you know, a couple hundred or more CDs, and you know, because I don't know enough detail about this company that I keep reading about, but I suspect that they've ripped the thing once.
And oh, they probably have.
It's sitting there somewhere, and then it's just like barcode.
But see, know. And that's where. But that, see, that's where. Like for me, a DRM service like Napster makes total sense. And I mean, yes, you are in effect renting the music because you're paying like $15 a month to get access to, you know what it is, like 700 million songs or no or, like, or no that's a that can't be right.
How
about like 700,000 songs? But anyway, so you get access to all those songs, and every time a new album is released, that is added to the catalog that you're able to access for $15 a month. I figure that on average, I'm buying now still even like at least one CD a month.
Yep.
And one CD a month, and generally I like look for like Target or Best Buy to have like some $10.99 special or less that prompts me to go buy it on CD. And so like for $10 a month, I can get one CD. Or for $15 a month, for as long as I'm willing to spend $15 a month, I have access to this like massive library of music that is growing every single month. And like and I look at my listening pattern, and I have this like a small subset of my music collection that I have taken the time to rip to my hard drive, and the rest of it is all sitting in a box. And you know, a year from now when I decide that, oh, you know, it'd be really cool to listen to whatever, I can go dig through the box. Or if I'm paying $15 a month, I can do a quick search on like the Napster service, download it, and I've got it.
See, at that point, I just turn on either the radio or like the TV that's got DMX, or just turn on some type of noise, unless I want to listen to something like specific. And then it's just like, what's more convenient?
But I mean, at the same time, I'm like going out and trying to seek out stuff that isn't necessarily Creative Commons licensed, but is like indie stuff that isn't necessarily mainstream and doesn't fit in the realm of the service or being able to go to the store and buy it on CD.
Yeah. And right. I've been, you know, I haven't bought any fewer CDs month to month than I have anymore. I got to say, what I really want is like a Napster or you know, one of Rhapsody, one of those on the Mac. Because I love the idea of there being that repository that you can at least stream it, listen to the stuff that you like. I like to have the right to do more with it than
isn't Rhapsody's Mac compatible, isn't it?
Is it? I haven't.
I think it is, because I think Real has made that, I think, and it may even extend over to Linux now.
Real has the whole like AAC transfer stuff.
But I think the Rhapsody service is actually, in terms of being able to stream on demand, it will do both Mac and PC.
We'll probably find out a little more when we go to the Desktop Linux Summit in a few weeks.
The thing that the reason that I remember this is the guy, I can't think of the guy's name, but the guy that does a VC blog, it was talking about using the Rhapsody service specifically for that reason.
All right, we've got the last 20 minutes of the show. Before we get to that, though, got to take another song, I guess, jaunt through the Magical Mystery musical tour that you've brought along with you.
Okay, and I dare you to find music like this on on your average top 40 radio station. This one just kills me. I love this track. The group is called Judd Judd, and I think you'll probably hear why. And this is the Hammer-On song.
Oh, man. You know, just when I thought that music had evolved to the point where we can get past the Beavis and Butthead thing, you come along with a song like that.
Music's got to be fun, too, you know?
I agree. I'm a big Weird Al fan. I love Moxie Fruvis. They Might Be Giants right up there.
But the thing about this one is that it's not just one guy doing air guitar. It's two guys doing air guitar in a coordinated, like, orchestrated fashion. And you can even see them with, like, one arm out and, like, you know, it's... I mean, there's a visual to go along with it. I think it's really the complete package.
I was going to say, is this something that would be better suited to a video?
I think that I would love to see a Judd Judd video. I would host it.
It kind of makes me think of something that Tenacious D might do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I could see that. Well, and on the thread of Beavis and Butthead, Jake had brought up something when we were sitting in the press, one of the press booths at the summit this week. We were listening to, I think it was Molly of Molly.com, I think it was her, talking about wikis. And we went right into a whole Beavis and Butthead routine and wondered what it would be like to have a back channel, Beavis and Butthead-esque, of like some type of streamed conference or, you know, whatever it happened to be, play-by-play, wiki. I like her wiki. I mean, I'm not trying to be, you know, And then she started talking about gesturing, which apparently is a term used in Wiki. And then we were walking through the casino the other day, just where my mind is. We went up to meet with a friend of ours, Harry, who apparently is really good friends with this casino. And we walked by some sign, and it's what was it? Oh, what was the word? But you could cover up part of it, and it would actually spell Waikiki. And I covered up part of it and went, Wiki! And this is what I see. And right now what I see is my fiancé standing outside the window with a camera. I think she's trying to take a picture.
And she's,
I think she's been taking pictures for a long
time. As long as she uses the flash, she won't be able to see us.
Yes. Well, I think I've shown her how not to use the flash. So, Matt, you work with the World Wide Web Consortium. You've got your Creative Commons-based audio station, I mean, to call it what it is. What's in the future? Do you have any goals beyond what you're doing now? Where would you want to see yourself, if not the whole idea of Creative Commons?
Wow.
Boy, was that too deep for you?
This is like, you know, I get this. I have this discussion with my wife, who I would say hi to, but she's not listening.
Oh, you know, if I knew, I didn't know you were married. If I'd known, I would seriously have invited her over.
Oh yeah, she would be like, I'm gonna be in the other room, like making popcorn with your wife. That's
man.
But anyway, you know, she does this to me, and she's like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I don't know. Like, what's interesting in 5 years? That's what I want to do. I mean, that's been that way since ever. I've always had that thing that, you know, ham radio, or there's always that one project that lasts me 6 months, and then I go to the next thing. You know, you pick up guitar, you learn enough of it, and then you're off to the next thing.
So is the Staccato project something that you see carrying forward, or
the thing about Staccato that you know, as I said before, it's sort of the culmination of a whole bunch of interests, and now with attention focused on it, I'm not just going to go, oh yeah, well I'm done with that. You know, I can't possibly do that anymore.
Like pulling Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, right. It only gets more interesting to me as I continue to do it, because I continue to improve my skills as a DJ, and you know, I'm starting to do interviews on the show now, and so I have, you know, it's a constant challenge, producing a show, as you I'm sure know with this, to you know, to have something that actually has a sort of, I don't want to say professional feel, because I'm a big believer in the whole pro-am thing, the pro-am revolution that people are talking about, that you're that everyone, it ends up becoming what used to be this impossible to achieve thing. Your own TV station, for example, right? Now you have a laptop and a camera and an internet connection, and you can go 24/7.
But see, we've had that for like several years.
But you have and you haven't, because you've never had the bandwidth to actually fire that out if you're just some guy, right?
And speaking of bandwidth, though, can we say what we transferred apparently in the time that we started the Chris Perillo show?
Apparently, since launch, we're like well over a terabyte of data.
A terabyte,
and that's not talking the live show. That's talking like downloads.
Yeah, that's.
I was gonna say I'm shocked at because I offload a lot of this on the Internet Archive, I get away with it, but the math that I've done on it is that Staccato so far this month is pushing 100 gig.
So now, are you hosting your podcasts on the Internet Archive then? So you're like compiling the show and then putting it back on the archive?
Well, what I'm starting off doing now is once the show's done, I'll put it up on my site. And because the Internet Archive takes about a day or half a day to approve new additions, because they sort of vet it, make sure that it's what it claims to be.
Make sure you're not like trying to slip through
like an M&M CD and something like that. So, once that's approved, I just redirect what the original URL was off to the new site. So all of the references are coming through me and then back off to the Internet Archive. But And then I also use the new Gary Lerhoff's project Prodigem, which is a torrent seeding program. So now I have a BitTorrent feed and the direct MP3 feed. And I know a lot of people that are podcasting are doing the BitTorrent feed as their only or far and away their primary system for it. But at this point, because I did like 5 or 6 shows before I started doing the torrent, the vast majority of them are just going straight for the MP3. So if I'm going to, and the way that the numbers are ramping up, it's like I could jump to a server that would give me 100 gig and I would run out in a couple weeks. And then I jump to another server and another server, and, you know, the Internet Archive, at least, because they're focused on getting stuff out there, is apparently happy to do it. They created a collection for Staccato now, so all of my stuff will be archived essentially forever, which is another nice thing about that, is that there's some kind of permanency to data. I mean, these are people that created a clock that will run 10,000 years and buried it, you know, buried in a mountain in California. So they're thinking about the long haul longer than anybody who's running a website somewhere is doing.
See, my thing was that, I mean, if you're getting free hosting, essentially, it's free hosting and you can't necessarily count on it being there forever.
Well, were it not for the fact that they are almost egging people on to load them down with, you know, with data and fill the pipe. They have the entire web as an archive. I mean, they have the Wayback Machine is fantastic. It's the most amazing thing, you know.
Have you looked at some of your efforts from way back?
Back in the Dizzle, yes, I have.
You know, I almost wonder if it's got my it was originally called a high plan, a hyper plan, or a home page.
Yeah.
And some people call their website still a home page.
You should look, because the amount of stuff that I found back there, I think I found the USA Hockey website that I designed back at the end of 95 or beginning of 96.
Now, what about finding the original Yahoo at stanford.edu/tilde/Yahoo?
Yeah, you might even be able to. I don't know. Maybe they only go back to 96 or something. You know, somewhere in there.
I'm trying Yahoo here. Let's give it a shot. Where the heck did put the tilde where it should be, not down at the bottom by the space bar.
But, you know, on Toshiba laptops, which both of us are using, the fact that the Windows key is up in the top right, making it effectively useless for keyboard shortcuts, is probably one of the most irritating things I've ever experienced.
This is the point where I point out that I don't have a Windows key, and my tilde key is where it's supposed to be.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, because you're a Mac user?
Correct.
Check this out, dude.
Well, see, the Windows key...
Hold on, Jake. It's got my old... From my old website when I was at UNI.
Which was what?
The uni.edu/tildeparillo. And this is like back when I had started Lockernum. This is like July 30th, 1997.
That's a very pumpkin color scheme you've got there.
This is like old. And actually, Microsoft linked to that page because it was using CSS.
It's uni.edu/tildeparillo.
Hang on. I'm going to see if I can find another one. Yeah, I don't know if it's got that one. I had Perilled 4.4. No, I couldn't find that one. Wow.
See, the thing that I love doing is going back and searching the Usenet archive for, you know, back when I was a newbie.
Oh, dude, I know I posted some junk on there.
Because I just added a whole bunch of new stuff to that, like, and started and actually pointed out things like Tim's original proposal for the World Wide Web and
all of that
stuff, the original Linux announcement.
Now, if you go and look at some of the original pages for Lockernum, it'll actually pull up cached versions of files.com, which was run by Michael Robertson. Lockernum server, Michael Robertson, mp3.com, Linspire, he offered to host Lockernum's website. on his web servers. And for that, I'm, you know, eternally grateful and very thankful. But now looking at some of these are like, oh my goodness. This is just, oh boy, God, talk about, yeah, you know, music can, you know, bring up old memories. Well, so can web pages.
Absolutely.
It's kind of sad and scary at the same time. But now I'm addicted now to looking at pages. I'm going to have to stop, look away from the notebook, and start looking at other things like you. Are they also archiving old music, like, that was posted on the web way back when, not necessarily just stuff that's now being uploaded?
I'm not sure how the Wayback Machine and the rest of the archive are integrated. So, because I think that there would be some difficulty as far as determining, you know, provenance, whether you actually...
Was that French?
No, it's... I heard it on on Antiques Roadshow. But provenance, it's where it came from, you know, so the origin. So the it was... So you have to... If you don't know who owned it, then you can't determine any concept of whether you can reshare it explicitly. I think that it's only HTML that they've been archiving to date. So, I'm not sure.
Which is enough to evoke memories, some good, some bad. Now we're winding down, hitting the last 5 minutes or so of the show. Is there anything that you wanted to kind of share, not only to our audience, but I guess your intended audience?
Yes. Actually, the tracks that we played, the Beastie Boys and Dan the Automator and the Thievery Corporation tracks, are part of a contest that is being run at ccmixter.org. And this is sort of the project of, you know, taking control and being able to participate in the media that you're consuming. So there are remix contests based on the entire CD, which you can get at creativecommons.org/wired, that you can remix and republish on ccmixter.org. There are going to be prizes. I'm going to be interviewing a couple people on Staccato coming up in the next episode to talk about this. And the ccmixter.org site is going to stick around. It's not just going to be about the mixing of this one CD, but it's going to be about the mixing and, you know, creating a culture of mixing. And I think if you want to talk about how do we convince the, you know, the commercial interests that are against the Creative Commons, this thing is, you know, like a participation in this sort of democratizing of musical content, where you just see this and you realize it's just music. You know, I can do this, and I think that alone is going to be a huge, you know, cultural movement in the offing.
Well, Matt, we certainly appreciate your time. Next time, you will have to bring your wife, and yes, hopefully, you will want to come back.
Oh yeah, sure.
At some point.
Yeah.
And share with us more music. And, of course, you're here in Seattle, and I'm sure we'll see each other in circles as we keep floating around town. But for everybody who's listening, this was the third hour of the Chris Perillo Show for January 27th, 2005. Two other hours are available at our website, thechrisperilloshow.com. I'd like to thank Microsoft Windows Media Division for helping make this show completely possible, and, of course, Limelight Networks for making the streaming happening. Or the streaming happen, I should say. And, you know, I just want to say thank you, everybody, and I hope to see you next time. We'll eat you later.
The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Windows Media Player 10 is the all-in-one media player that provides the best experience for discovering, playing, and taking your digital entertainment anywhere. Download Windows Media Player 10 from Microsoft.com/Windows Media. Live streaming of the show is provided by Limelight Networks. Comprehensive solutions that reduce the cost and complexity of delivering an engaging internet experience. Archived Windows Media and MP3 versions of past shows are available from ChrisPerilloShow.com. Listen to The Chris Perillo Show live every Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific.